Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jesse Glines from Western South Dakota. Now, Jesse, obviously, he's a walleye angler, and for this particular interview, a lot of people write in, and my own personal interests really manifested this particular podcast, and that is the co-angler experience of the NWT. It's something that I'm super interested in. I've never done it before, I've got a lot of questions on this, and Jesse's the guy for this interview because he has a bunch of experience with it. The last handful of years, he got into it, and it's an interesting story. I'm excited for everybody to listen to it because I think it's really relatable. But, you know, Jesse has lots of different motivations to want to get better at fishing and learn more about fishing and seeking out these opportunities to, you know, get in the boat with these pros, top-end pros at these NWT events is a pretty unbelievable opportunity, right? And he saw it and went for it. And for a couple of years, he fished the entire tour as a co-angler. And even up to like last season, the 2023 season, he fished all four events and then qualified for the championship, which was in Devil's Lake. And, you know, when it was all said and done, he finished in second place in 2023 for the co-angler of the year. So a very interesting story there. He's got a lot of other experience to reflect on. And so this is a show that's kind of been a long time coming. It's something that I've been interested in finding somebody for this. And Jesse's the guy. Does a great interview, tells us his story. And I think there's a lot of great takeaways from this for a lot of people. I think it's a very interesting opportunity that the industry has right now with the NWT. If you look at the schedule and you see that either you live near where one of these tournaments is going to be, or maybe the location, the destination of one of these tournaments is really attractive to you and you want to learn more about it, or something you have experience with, or whatever it is, if something resonates with you, it's such an opportunity for the cost to register and hopefully get selected to be a co-angler at one of these NWT events, for the cost of it, it's an unbelievable opportunity to get a couple days in the boat with these pros that fish the top level walleye series, the NWT. And I feel like it's something that is important to kind of shine a little bit of a light on, because, you know, it may not be for everybody, but there's probably a lot of people out there that are either interested in it or maybe they aren't before. But hopefully you listen to Jesse's story and you might realize that it's something that you ought to be considering. You might be the right person for the job, so to speak. It's, definitely can be different things for different people. But for Jesse, learning and getting better as an angler is really at the heart and soul of, his motivation. And for lots of different reasons, for getting better to also fish other tournaments on your own, or learn about a specific body of water, or just to get better as an angler every day so that you can pass that tradition on to your kids and come home and, you know, take your family fishing and family and friends fishing and just be a more proficient angler. And I mean, who better to learn from in person in the boat than these NWT pros? And so, just another great opportunity that the industry has, you know, in it, and something that, I think it made a pretty interesting podcast. So Jesse Glines, he's our guy from Western South Dakota, and definitely appreciated his time. So let's get into it. The co-angler, the NWT co-angling experience with Jesse Glines.
PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fishing tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun, a must have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast.
Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online.
Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast.
JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. The fishing opportunities across the state of Montana are phenomenal. If you're from there or you've already been there a bunch to experience it, you know just how special these opportunities are. If you haven't, fishing out west should absolutely be on your bucket list. But aquatic invasive species like zebra mussels and Eurasian water milfoil can harm recreational opportunities. As boaters, as anglers, we have the ability to help protect Montana's waters by cleaning all mud, plants, and debris off our boat, recreational equipment, and fishing gear before we leave any access sites. Drain the water from your motor, your live well, your bilges, and allow your boat and equipment time to dry before your next outing. No matter what watercraft you use, please, if you're traveling in the state of Montana, stop at all inspection stations. Together, we can protect Montana's waters. Visit the link in the description of this podcast for more information. That's fwp.mt.gov/AIS. Tell us a little bit about yourself, fishing-wise. Like, where are you from? Where did you start fishing? Where do you spend all your time? Where did you develop your passion? Like, I'm here for all of it, man. So where does your fishing story start?
Yeah, so I live out in Buffalo, South Dakota. I have a little lake about 5 miles west of town here is where I kind of got started. I can remember, you know, when I was a lot younger, my dad taking us out. We didn't do much fishing out of a boat, but we would do shore fishing, ice fishing, things like that. So that's where it got started. And then kind of over time, sort of this same thing. I did a lot of fishing out there with my friends. And then we would go to little ponds for some crappie or bluegill, whatever. And then as I got older, into high school, you know, it kind of slowed down a little bit for me as far as fishing. And then moving on to, you know, when I kind of entered the work world, I kind of got back into it again here, probably about maybe 15 years ago. I started slowly fishing quite a little more and then bought my first boat, just a little old 89 Bayliner that, you know, I could scoot across the lake about 25 miles an hour. Not your standard fishing boat these days, but as I kind of progressed and started my own business and got a little more financially stable, I was able to buy a lot better boat and kept upgrading. And, you know, up until about probably 5 years ago, I would say, is when I really started to hit it a little bit harder. And not as much as I'd like, but I'm a family guy. I have a wife, 4 kids at home, all still in school. So I go when I can, I take them when I can, or when they want to go, I should say. But yeah, and then about, I think it was in 2019, my brothers and sister got together and we bought a co-angler trip for my dad for Christmas. And then I bought one for myself and then we all went together and bought one for my dad to take him out, get that experience. He loves to fish, but we always want to learn, you know. So, but something, I can't remember what happened that year. I think the first tournament of the year got moved from where it was. I think due to ice, maybe it got moved a little farther away from us. So, by that, I think it was like another, I can't remember, 4 to 6 hours farther. So, we ended up not going to it. And then the following year, I think same thing, we had one bought, but then COVID hit. So we were just never able to do it. And then when 2021 rolled around, that's when I decided I was going to fish a couple myself. My dad had some back issues going on, so he decided he wasn't going to do it. So I ended up going to two events in 21 as a co-angler, and then 22 and 23, I fished all four events as a co-angler.
I guess I'm just curious, being over in South Dakota, being a fan of the NWT, or just being like, how did that sort of become a thing for you? I mean, is it just, the internet, networking, or did you know some people that fished it, or like how did you sort of like connect those dots from, being somebody kind of in a place in South Dakota? There's fishing around, but you're not necessarily, smack dab in the middle of a walleye capital of the world, right? I'm just kind of curious how you connected those dots.
Yeah. So like I said, back in 2019, I guess, is when I first had the idea about the NWT, because it was, one of the circuits where you were able to go fish with pros and learn from them. So that's what kind of got me interested in. I'm like, oh, how's this going to go, and how's it going to be? Am I going to learn? Am I just there to net fish? So I wanted to give it a try and see what it was all about. And because, out here in Western South Dakota, I mean, my closest big body of water would be Lake Oahe in Mobridge, and that's 3.5 hours from my house.
Right.
So just being able to go do stuff like this, I was in a position in my life where financially I was able to, do some traveling to do the National Walleye Tour, and just being able to go to these events. And to be honest, it was nothing like what I thought. I thought I was going to go there and they would tell me to grab a net and I'd net a fish, but it wasn't really like that at all. I mean, they teach you exactly what they want you to do. And I mean, you're there as a legit partner. So it was an amazing experience. I learned so much from these guys, and they're all great. There's still a lot of these guys that I'll reach out to if I still have questions. I'll hit them up on Instagram, Facebook, something, and ask a few questions. And I've never had a guy not answer a question. So they're just amazing guys, and they want, they want you to learn. They want to build the sport. It's amazing, to be honest.
I'm kind of curious about sort of depicting your time as a co-angler. You got to the point where you started doing them. You did multiple seasons, like doing the whole circuit, the whole tour as a co-angler, and you had a tremendous finish last year, 2023. We can get to that, but I'm curious about the whole experience, like the first one that you did. Like, what was it like, getting signed up, or some of the the whole experience of what it was like, and where it met your expectations, or, some of the things that maybe felt familiar to you, but what were some of the surprises? Like, I'm kind of like, I'm in search of all of it, the total experience.
Yeah. So, like I said, it started for me back in 2021. Chamberlain was my first event ever. Got paired with a couple of good pros. That one was fairly, the stuff we were doing, dragging jigs or pulling crankbaits, things like that, I was all pretty familiar with. So I was pretty comfortable. I was very nervous going into it. As a co-angler, my biggest fear always was not going to fish off with a net. Thankfully, it never happened. But I mean, it was a little nerve wracking, but that stuff, that particular tournament in Chamberlain, I fished a lot like Oahe up in Mobridge to me. So I was fairly familiar with that. And they're easy to sign up for. If you go to their website, you can subscribe to the newsletter. Then you just, like nowadays, though, you want to sign up for the event, immediately. Otherwise, they fill up so fast. But it's real easy. You go to their website, go through the registration process, and that's it. I believe it's $500. But when you think about that, I mean, you can't get a guided trip really for under $500. And that's essentially what this is a guided fishing trip. Except you learn a lot of new techniques, and you have the ability to possibly win some money at the same time. So it is truly amazing. But you know, I started there. You know, my second event was in Mobridge, you know, that, and I actually learned a lot in that one. I mean, I've been a troller my whole life, but not to the extent of what we did in Mobridge that year. I mean, we were trolling crankbaits in 90 feet of water on top of 40-foot cottonwood trees down in the bottom of the lake. And we had two different setups. We were running lead core, you know, 240 feet of lead core out on a couple rods, and then a couple other ones. We just had snap weights on, and it was just amazing. You know, it was such an experience to reel a 25-plus-inch walleye in on 240 feet of lead core. It was exhausting, but amazing at the same time. It was so fun. And great guys. I mean, I think my first pro that year was Kent Anderson, and he ended up winning that tournament.
That was your first. That was your first.
That was my second event. But my day one pro was Kent Anderson, who ended up winning the tournament, and it was just awesome. And you know, I finished 14th in that event. So I was very happy. I got a check in my second event. So. I mean, I was very, very pleased with that.
Is there any type of an expectation, you know, fishing wise, like that, you know, you should be out there pre-fishing, you should be doing any of this, like did any of the pros ever talk about that? Like you should be familiar with the body of water, or do most of these co-anglers just like show up the day of and it doesn't matter?
Yeah, I think it's a little of both. I mean, I've never had a pro, you know, basically ask me if I was out pre-fishing or, you know, telling me that I should be. I think a big thing is, you know, showing up with some experience. You know, obviously it's a bonus if it's stuff that you're really familiar with, the techniques that they're using, if you're familiar with that, that's a great thing for the pro. They don't have to teach you as much or kind of, for lack of better word, babysit you the whole time, you know,
mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit of both. Like I said, you know, I don't really, there are some people that, you know, I even did it a couple of times. I would fly to some of these tournaments and have a friend pick me up and then just pre-fish with them for a day or two. But a lot of guys, you know, they're people that will show up and just go sit at the dock and, you know, ask pros, hey, you know, I'm available today if you'd like, you know, like some help. And a lot of guys jump in that way and they meet some nice pros, and then a lot of times they'll end up traveling with them eventually. But you know, I think you can do it either way. Obviously if it's your home body of water and you can go out and do some pre-fishing and kind of figure out some stuff, you know, learn some techniques, you know, different places to fish, you know, that's obviously a bonus. I think you can share a little bit of information on day one, but you don't want to, you know, obviously you're not telling the pro what to do, but
right.
You can just tell them you had a good pre-fish yourself, you know? So, I mean, it's like I said, you can do it either way. Seems like any more recently, there's been a lot of it's so hard to get into them now, or so that it fills up so fast. I believe it, you know, this year, I think there were over 100 co's that signed up on day one. So it's becoming a lot more popular. We're seeing a lot more interest in it as co-anglers. And I mean, it's just an amazing experience, to be honest. And you can kind of pick how you do it, I guess, if you want to travel with someone or not. I mean, I didn't the first year. The second year, I actually reached out to a friend of mine who used to fish the NWT, and he got me in touch with a couple pros. So in 22 and 23, I traveled with those guys and was able to pre-fish with them. And so that was also, I mean, it's just more time on the water, more time learning and learning new things. So, I mean, it really helped me a lot there. I can honestly say in the 11 events I went to as a co-angler, I learned something in every single one of them. And that was my big expectation going in, probably the only expectation, honestly, have fun and learn something. And that's why I'm in it, is to learn.
Yeah. I feel like that's the big opportunity. Like if somebody's asking themselves whether or not they might be a good candidate for it, like having the motivation and intentions of going in there and learning and bettering yourself. And wouldn't you say that maybe made you kind of a little bit better candidate?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that was kind of my expectation going in as well, is eventually I wanted to just try a pro event. So I wanted to gather and soak up as much information as I could as a co-angler, learning from these guys. And I, And I did. I mean, I was with some great guys. I mean, Dylan Nussbaum, he's amazing at live scope. I was with him at Chamberlain 1 year, and I just got to watch him, well, I mean, hit fish in the face with these jigs and stuff and things like that. I was able to learn a lot more about was forward facing sonar. Trolling deep water was something I'd never really done. I'd always been kind of a bottom bouncer spinner guy, but I mean, I don't even hardly bring that out anymore. So having the motivation to learn and want to get better. I mean, I think you kind of put off a vibe to where these guys understand that's what you're after and they're more than willing to help you out.
Yeah.
So it's awesome. You learn a lot.
The vibe. Now, this is probably personal and different for everybody and situational, but the big picture of things, like when you're a co-angler, that relationship with the pro each and every day, especially if it's, you know, somebody new, it's a stranger, you know, you don't know that person personally. You know, when you get to fishing and you get out there, like, when does the opportunity to maybe ask questions show up? I mean, I can't imagine that as soon as you shake hands, you don't want to hit them with, you know, the 10 big questions you got on your mind. You know, you got to be a little bit patient about that. But when does that sort of back and forth opportunity, you know, really come in your mind?
Yeah, I guess, like, for me, my question as a co-angler, you know, whenever I would meet my pro, you know, I would always ask them, you know, how was your pre-fish? You know, we'd start off a little discussion that way or whatnot. And I'd still be nervous. You know, it seems like after you get that first fish in the boat on tourney day, it kind of eases the tension a little bit. And it seems the chatter really picks up after that. I mean, that's how it's always been for me. Then it seems like the conversation goes back and forth, especially if it's like a different technique that I saw the guy doing. I'm like, oh yeah, so how are you doing that, you know? And he would explain it and I'm like, oh yeah, that's amazing, you know, I'll try working on that a little bit. And then all of a sudden you catch one that way, so it's like little light bulbs going off in your head all day of new information. I mean, it's a constant learning experience all day for me. I mean, I'm not, when it comes to the fishing side of it, I wasn't real shy about it. I would ask any question that came to mind. And like I said, I never had a guy tell me to sit down and shut up, you know, so it was, they were more than happy to answer the questions every time.
What do you feel like? I mean, fishing wise, you know, there's gotta be some great stories in this, like in the first, you know, you first handful of trips, or maybe, you know, maybe you can remember the first like real big revelation that you had, like as a co-angler, you know, those moments that where you feel like it absolutely paid off, you learned something pretty awesome, and it's in the front of your mind now, the angler that you are today. Like, what were some of the first real big like fishing elements that you learned in your co-angler career?
I would say probably that Mulbridge tournament in 2021. Like, I at that moment in my life had no idea you could get a, you know, number 11 Berkeley Flicker minnow down to the bottom of 90 feet. Like, I mean, I guess we didn't go all the way to 90. We went down to about 50 feet, but to plink their bills off the tops of trees and just watch those walleyes go crazy and just crush them. It was like something I'd never seen or been a part of. I didn't even honestly know it was possible to get them down that far. And I shouldn't say I didn't know it was possible. I had no idea how to make it happen, I guess would be. So
yeah,
when Kent kind of showed me how to do that, and I mean, it was amazing. I mean, you know, and from there, you know, sort of, you know, fishing the Mississippi River in 2022, that was a little bit different too. That was my first experience with willow cats. And you know, I had no idea that those walleye were going to go nuts for a spiky little creature like those things. But I mean, they did. I mean, if you could get them, those willow cats in the right spot, I mean, they just inhaled them. So, I mean, it was things like that, that just kind of blew my mind. And, you know, it's kind of crazy. I don't have a very good memory anymore about, you know, back when I was younger or whatnot. But if you ask me about any one of these tournaments, I mean, I knew exactly what guy I fished with, what we did. I just soaked up so much information.
PK Lures offers a deadly lineup of fish and tackle for walleye anglers. If you like to rig live bait, check out their pre-rig spinner rigs. Everything they have is very unique action profiles and colors. I'm talking about the Dakota Disc or the Wobbler. If you like throwing glide baits, new in 2024, PK came out with the Ridge Glider. It's a shad profile glide bait with an oversized hook, awesome for leaning into big fish. Got a really cool blade accessory on the back for added flash. The action on this thing is so much fun. A must have for anybody that wants to throw glide baits all summer long. Crankbaits, lipless crankbaits, they've got it all. This summer, if you want to set yourself apart and offer the fish something they've never seen before, check out what PK's got at pklure.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Use promo code JMO for 20% off all orders and free shipping for any orders over $75 online. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. JT Outdoor Products has created a phenomenal lineup of technique-specific rods built entirely to give any angler the advantage against a tournament field, or more importantly, the target species of the day. For any angler that is looking to take their next fishing experience to another level, consider the confidence you might have with a JT rod in your hands. For more information on all the rod offerings at JT, head to their website. That's jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Also on the website, take the time to look up the impressive pro staff that JT has put together and find out why so many top industry pros, from tournament anglers to fishing guides across the Midwest, swear by the rods built at JT Outdoor Products. The fishing opportunities across the state of Montana are phenomenal. If you're from there or you've already been there a bunch to experience it, you know just how special these opportunities are. If you haven't, fishing out west should absolutely be on your bucket list. But aquatic invasive species like zebra mussels and Eurasian water milfoil can harm recreational opportunities. As boaters, as anglers, we have the ability to help protect Montana's waters by cleaning all mud, plants, and debris off our boat, recreational equipment, and fishing gear before we leave any access sites. Drain the water from your motor, your live well, your bilges, and allow your boat and equipment time to dry before your next outing. No matter what watercraft you use, please, if you're traveling in the state of Montana, stop at all inspection stations. Together, we can protect Montana's waters. Visit the link in the description of this podcast for more information. That's fwp.mt.gov/AIS. Like, what were some of the things that pros would communicate with you, like, you know, as far as their expectations, or just some things that, you know, you had to kind of recalculate and be like, okay, that's what I got to focus on to be a better co-angler next time.
Yeah. And I think honestly, confidence. Like, it's, if you come in like super nervous, like I was always nervous, but not to the point where I'd make myself sick or anything. But, you know, I always said that knocking that fish off, that was my big thing that I was always worried about. I mean, other than that, I mean, I wasn't really, you know, I was real comfortable reeling fish in or netting them either way. I mean, it didn't bother me too much. You know, getting cadences down, you know, there were certain guys I was with, if we were popping jigs off the bottom or something, there was a certain cadence they wanted. So, you know, I would do my best to replicate what they wanted. But, you know, going in, I've never really been a strong jig fisherman or anything like that. So, I mean, that was a little nerve wracking for me, but they're like, just, you know, don't worry about it. Just try this, you know, try this. They're always telling you kind of how to do it and what they expect. So if you just kind of pay attention and listen and absorb what you can when they're telling you about it, I mean, it's really not that bad. So you just, yeah, I mean, like I said, you're learning all the time. You just, if you can listen and learn, you'll be fine.
At what point in time did you start thinking more seriously that you were going to make the jump and start fishing the pro side?
Yeah, so last year was, I mean, it was a really good year. I fished, you know, the normal four events, and then I made the championship, and my worst finish was 25th all year. So I started out, you know, 23rd at the Illinois River event. That one was an experience. It was cold. I remember several mornings we got up and the pond next to our hotel was froze over again. There were guys that would slip on ice and fell in the boat in the MWC tournament that was right before us. I mean, it was just crazy cold that year. But then we went to Winnebago. We got to do some different stuff there, slip bobbering out in the middle of nowhere, which was something new to me as well. So, I mean, we were just drifting and dragging slip bobbers, and you know, I ended up 20th in that tournament. Francis Case was up next, I believe. Same thing we did. It was a little bit different, but we were fishing in deep water on top of trees, but we were pulling 3-ounce bottom bouncers across the top of them and with crawler harnesses. And that was another great tournament for me. I finished 14th in that one. And at that point, that's when it kind of started to sink in. I think after that tournament, it moved me into first place in the co-angler side. So everything kind of started to come together at that point. So I started getting real excited about it. And the next event was Sault Ste. Marie. Finished 25th in that one. Got to fish, I think Owen Wilcox was my day one pro. And for a young kid, I mean, he is lights out with live scope as well. It was fun watching him do what he does. So that was a great experience. And then the championship was Devil's Lake, and lots of big fish up there. We couldn't get on the right ones. We were on fish the whole time, but the ones we were on just kind of went negative on us. So we would catch two or three a day was it. And it just wasn't enough to get me into that third day where I needed to go. If I would have got to the third day, I was guaranteed the co-angler championship, because I was ahead by like 13 points, I think. So it just didn't work out. But at that point, you know, I finished second in co-angler of the year. So I knew at that point, I kind of was just going to make the jump. I didn't want to fish the co-angler side again. Just because I thought I kind of experienced what I needed to experience. So I thought either I'm going to do something different or I'm going to make the jump to the pro side. And to be honest, I listened to a interview that Gary Parsons gave a long time ago. I can't even remember when it was, but it was about the same thing. I think it was about when Chase was talking about making the jump, and his advice was to just make the jump. He's like, yes, you're going to get your butt kicked, but getting your butt kicked and working against these guys and beside them every day, you learn so much, and it forces you to open your mind and learn new things if you want to be able to compete. And I mean, honestly, I can say that's exactly what it did. I did a lot of things this year on the pro side that, you know, I normally wouldn't have done, but even just being able to go out and have fun breaking down water and just experiencing all these new places, it's an amazing experience.
Yeah. I mean, you know, yeah. Being a co-angler, finishing second for, you know, the co-angler of the year, you can't really go back into that pool the next year and think you're going to do much better. You know, I mean, it's like you experienced it to its full extent. So yeah, very insightful there. But I'm also curious too, like for somebody that fished a couple of seasons, you fished the whole tour. Is it fair to really, you know, worry about and keep track of where you finish, when, you know, ultimately you're not in the boat making decisions, you're drawing, I don't know what the selection process is, but it's ultimately like lottery, right? It's like drawing out of a hat, like who your pros are.
Yes.
So yep. You're really, you know, where you finish at the end of the season, how much of that has anything to do with you, you know, versus just being drawn, you know, just the luck of the draw for like who you draw and in what location and like how your pros finish? Like, I'm just, you know, just sort of curious about that, just because I feel like the expectation, you know, if somebody wants to get into the co-angler side because, you know, they feel like they have, you know, something to learn, but also they feel like they have something to give, and they might worry a little bit about where they finish, you know, how much control over that do you even really have?
Right. And that's, you know, that's one of the, like you said, I mean, I would never expect, had I done the co-angler side this year, to be able to replicate that, because it has so much to do with luck of the draw, to be honest. I mean, like, if, you know, if you're lucky enough to draw the guy that wins a tournament, great. That never happened for me, which that's fine. Being consistent is a big thing. Like, honestly, as a co-angler, I feel like the only thing that's really in your control is when you're reeling that fish in, you're doing what you can to not lose it. And then when you're not reeling a fish in and you're netting it, you're not knocking it off. That's about all you can control. So the rest of it, you know, as far as, I think you can't come into the NWT as a co-angler thinking, I'm a great fisherman, I'm going to be able to win these tournaments, because you don't have that type of control. It's not something you just can't control it at all. So, but you just got to be able to come in and do your part. Like I said, just don't knock a fish off and reel in the ones that bite your lure. And that's really all you can do. You know, when I was on the pro side this year, you know, if my co-angler had something to say, I always listened. I mean, they might know a little bit about something that I didn't know. So, and you learn all that stuff through the conversations you have out there on the water. But yeah, as far as, you know, being the co, like I said, it was more about the experience and learning for me. I never would have dreamt I would have ended up second in Angler of the Year. And I knew it was all, I mean, that was the guys I drew. You know, there could have been a guy that finished, you know, 50th. He might be a better fisherman than me, but we just drew different people on those events. So that's just how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. I find that to be interesting too, but also, like, you know, just human psychology. If you're considering this for the first time, you really got to set your expectation properly. If you're going to jump in on the co side and you're kind of just, you're not getting any other advice, you don't really know what to expect, and you start to, you know, you're doing a little bit of research, but you're kind of setting your own expectations. You're kind of, you know, you're sizing yourself up in all of this. That can probably be a bit of a downer.
Yeah.
You know, if you worry too much about, like, where you're at on the standings as the season goes along, just focus on the learning, being in the moment, in the, you know, when you're in the boat and soaking it in as much as you possibly can. If you end up with a check anywhere at any point in time, you just almost got to consider that complete icing on the cake.
Right.
I imagine. But yeah, man, that's really interesting. So yeah, like when you look back on it, you know, I think that, you know, just sort of hearing your story a little bit, I feel like is something that I would relate to, and maybe not everybody would, but the fact that, you know, you got into it to learn, and, you know, you weren't necessarily from anywhere specifically that, you know, that you had like a home body of water that was always on the schedule or whatever, you know, like Lake Oahe is a capital fishery, but it's 3+ hours away from where you live. And so, you know, that's interesting, and it's cool that you were motivated enough to go and do it. And, you know, and then you know, when you did that first event, I suppose like you probably had like a real fun, you know, hypothetical thought in your head that maybe someday it would bring you to, you know, fishing the pro side of things. But did you really, like, when you were fishing that first co-angler event, did you already have it in your mind that someday you were going to sign up for on the pro side for the whole tour?
No, honestly, like when I signed up those first couple, just because my dad and I, you know, we would fish these little local tournaments on Lake Oahe. So I kind of signed up to like, oh, maybe I can learn a couple things, you know, during these tournaments that'll help us in the local tournaments. I mean, that was the whole reason I signed up.
Right on.
And then all this, you know, in 22, when I did all four, that's when I kind of started to think about, and even that year, I think it was just more of, you know what, I'm going to try the co-side for four events to see how much information I can learn. And that's when I, you know, kind of started traveling with a couple guys, and, you know, through talking with them, their experiences, how they came up, you know, they kind of helped convince me to do it as well. Just like, you're not out anything. If you can afford to do it, go for it. You're going to keep learning, keep evolving. So yeah, it was, like I said, I had no intention of doing it probably until about 2 years ago, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of answered my other question, or my next question is, like, do you ever fish any other tournaments besides the NWTs? I mean, what other tournament experience do you have?
Not a lot, honestly. There's, you know, last year we fished a little fall brawl one and on a little puddle around here. And then I fished probably four or five events, maybe on Lake Oahe and Mulbridge, and, you know, just that's about it. That's all. I mean, cause those are the only areas that we really have anywhere close to me to even do a tournament. So we got to travel so far that, and at the time I didn't, like I said, I wasn't, fishing a lot. So my dad was my partner in a lot of the stuff. I didn't know anybody else really that would be willing to kind of meet me 10 hours away at that point. And that was kind of the other great thing. Like, I feel very confident now after doing all this stuff. I've met enough people. Like, if I even meeting other co-anglers over the years, you know, I think I could call up any one of those and say, hey, let's go fish a MWC event together, you know, out in Wisconsin or Minnesota. And it just the connections and the people you meet in this industry, it really kind of broadens everything out for you. It gives you way more opportunity. If you don't want to fish the NWT, you could, you know, build a partner and go fish different circuits, the AIM, anything like that. So it's a great place to meet other people with your exact passion.
I think, you know, when you talk about it that way and you depict that experience, like, I think that, 100%. Those are just such awesome things and opportunities. But definitely kudos to you being somebody, or just being where you're from, you know, where it's not like, this was definitely a commitment. Like, you definitely had to see this and know that you wanted it.
Right.
Or wanted the opportunity. Because, you know, everything's an away game for you, you know, it's not like there's four events and, you know, luckily, you know, one of them, you know, like somebody that lives on the shores of Green Bay is pretty confident that every year, you know, 3 out of 4 years, they're going to be able to fish one close to home,
yep.
You know, or, you know, what, you know, there's just some of these, you know, Erie or whatever, some of these capital fisheries that just are typically on the schedule. Even if it's not the NWT, it's something, you know, something big will show up, every year, but, not for you, man. Like, everything's an away game. Everything's a commitment. It's time away from your family. It's time away from your wife and kids. And it's also fishing time that, you know, I mean, unless your wife and kids come with you, you know, we all only have so many days to fish, and you're a family man. Some of those days got to be, you know, for the family. And so these are days that aren't, you know, for that. So like, there's everybody's got to balance that too, right? That's like a whole nother podcast conversation. It's like, how do you balance tournament fishing and family time? Right. But
yeah, exactly.
But yeah, man, no, I think that stuff's all great, dude. So, so what else? So like, you know, fishing other circuits, I find that to be interesting that like the NWT, probably fulfills the vast majority of your tournament experience, being a co-angler and a pro alike. But, you know, a lot of people might imagine themselves, they want to earn that they want to fish other tournaments. They want, you know, you want to have those stepping stones where you work your way up onto an NWT roster. But, you know, having the confidence to just make that jump, you know, just, you know, fish a few small derbies around home, but you're just so committed to the learning, it sounds like. I mean, that's, you know, that would be the other question too, is like, how do you sort of describe that for yourself? That's almost like a personality trait that, you know, once you get into that environment, you find out that a lot of other people have that trait, but it's like, what is it about tournament angling that even interests you at all versus literally just, maybe you just buy a lake cabin somewhere and just take your family fishing all the time. Like, what is it about tournament angling that draws you in so much?
The competitiveness. I'm a huge competitor. I love any sort of sport. I love playing sports still, and I'm very, very competitive, probably too competitive, honestly. So that's the big driver for me. And then another one, you know, I got, you know, like I said, I have a wife, three small kids or four small kids, a little boy who's, you know, now 7. He likes fishing, and I want to be able to have the knowledge that when I take them fishing, that I can put them on fish. I don't want to go out and just fish a spot and hope something bites. I want to be able to give them the experience of actually catching fish, you know, through the rough times, but be able to work through those rough times and still have the ability and knowledge to go find the fish and find the right ones that are willing to bite that day. So that was honestly a big driver for me as well, was I don't want my kids to be in a boat and get bored and then lose interest in the sport.
Yeah, there's a lot of life lessons, right? That's another thing we don't ever talk, you know. Yeah. Well, we do talk about it when we're in the boat. Like, I think that's probably a conversation that gets had anytime two anglers get together, is just, you know, just the those wholesome conversations about, you know, fishing. If you're willing to look at the big picture, it's like fishing is just such a great way to spend your time, quality time, whether you're alone, with buddies, with family. Yeah, I feel like that's a fantastic motivator. You want to be able to pass on your passion and the tradition of fishing onto your kids. You know, maybe someday, whether they take to it or not is up to them. But at the same time, if you like it a lot, you don't want to screw it up, right?
Right. Yep.
What else? What are we forgetting? What am I forgetting to ask? Like, what are some other things, even if it's off the water advice, like about the process of getting signed up, getting in touch with the pros, and, or, you know, whatever it is, like just etiquette, or maybe, you know, just any little bit of advice you could give somebody that is thinking about jumping into one of these.
I guess the last thing I would say about it is, you know, there's been a lot of talk about forward facing sonar and everyone's using it, and we're basically taking the co-anglers out of the mix. And that's just not true. There's a lot of pros now that are running, they're bringing like a second live sonar for their co-angler. So they're back there too. But even if the co-angler's pitching blind, I mean, that's not that big of a deal. I mean, there was just a guy, I think it was Tom Wynn, that said he had a co-angler on the Mississippi River this year that caught two or three of his day two fish completely blind.
Yeah.
I mean, the pros are putting you in the right areas, and they'll tell you, you know, like, okay, I'm watching sonar right here in front of me, pitch over here to the left 20 feet. You know, they're putting you in the right areas. There's fish in the area. So you're still a very big part of what's going on. Even if you do end up netting them, it's huge. There's been a lot of times when, you know, I've lost fish when I'm by myself because, you know, no one was there to net it for me or things like that. So the co-anglers are still very important. So if anybody's saying anything about the live sonar, how it's taken, changing the game, and it's making it to where they're not relevant anymore, it's just not true. They're still, and I think it's going to keep evolving too. I mean, I think more and more pros that I've seen in the 3 years of doing this are starting to have, like I said, that backup sonar for their co-angler. So it's a great experience for you to learn that as well while you're sitting there doing it, and they're showing you, you know, kind of what to look for. And so, yeah, you're definitely relevant. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a great point to make for sure. Was there anything like awesome, wow factor, surreal, anything different about making the championship? Was there a different vibe with the pros? Was there anything like totally different about that experience, or did it seem just like another regular season event?
Just the fact that you knew, you know, going in that it was the 40 best anglers that year was, I mean, that was pretty awesome to be there with them, to kind of watch them, hear their stories, see them on the water. And then, you know, they get up and weigh their fish, talk a little bit. So, I mean, it was all just a very, very cool experience to be a part of. I guess that's what I would say about that.
You can't have a bad draw.
Devil's Lake.
Yeah,
no,
you can't have
amazing.
A tough draw when you're at the championship.
Right. And you just got to go with the flow. I mean, you know, just like that, you know, I talked to my day one pro who had a very, very good pre-fish. And we went to those spots on day one and they just didn't fire. I mean, that's just life in the industry. I mean, that's why you just can't go in with full expectations that you're going to dominate and win this thing, because everything just changes so fast. But I mean, it was amazing to see some of those big fish. What John Hoyer did was amazing. I mean, he found the right fish, was able to get them to go. And it was great. It was fun to watch. That's for sure.
wrap this thing up, as always, you know, if you want to, if anybody ever had any questions, or, you know, you fish the NWT now, if anybody ever wants to follow along on your exploits, I don't know if you do it much on social media, but anything that you want to promote, if anybody wanted to, you know, check out your stuff or follow along with you, man, anything you want to throw out there, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm on Instagram, jesse.glines, or then on Facebook, Jesse Glines. I also have a website called meterfishing.com. I manufacture some fishing products if you're interested in something like that, but I'm happy to answer, you know, if anybody wants to jump in on the co-angler side or things like that. I mean, you can sure reach out on either platform, Facebook, Instagram, and I'm happy to answer questions anytime.
There it is, man. I appreciate the time, Jesse, and